Hey, YouTubers, Glenda here. This is our weekly Just Praise Him radio show. And today I'm going to be talking about taking your promised land. This is the third podcast in the Living by Faith and Not by Sight, the little three podcast series that the Lord showed me to do. I want to talk about some of the obstacles to taking your promised land and some of the things that you encounter when you take your promised land so that you know to watch out for them. And also, at least one sign of when you're coming out of the wilderness and entering into your promised land. There's actually a couple of signs. If I have enough time, I'll try to talk about both of them. I'm late making today's podcast. It's after 4 o'clock in the evening where I live, and usually I have it done by now, but the Lord didn't actually give me the subject until today, so... Okay. One of the first things that I want to talk to you about, because this is so very important, and if you listen to me very long, you've heard me talk about this, but I'm still going to talk about it again because it's really important. In Joshua chapter 3, and they commanded the people, saying, and this was when Joshua was getting ready to take Jericho, to cross over the Jordan and take Jericho. And they commanded the people, saying, when you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God and the priests, the Levites, bearing it, then you shall remove from your place and go after it. The Ark of the Covenant was where God's presence dwelt. And, you know, I've always said, if you see the brook drying up where you're at, then God is fixing to move you, because he's not going to leave you in a place where there's no provision. If you go where he leads you, there's always provision. Where the Lord guides, he always provides. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Psalm 23:1. When the ark moves, the anointing goes with it. God's presence goes with it, and the peace goes with it, okay? So the brook starts drying up, and the next thing you'll notice if you stay very long in that place is you're not quite as happy there. And it's not just because the brook dried up. It's because all of a sudden, it doesn't look as good to you anymore. Okay? I want to read y'all a story. The point of this being, when the ark moves, when God's presence moves, when his anointing moves, you better move with it. Okay? Because that's his provision, his protection, his peace. Everything is in the ark. I'm going to read y'all a story that I share with permission. That happened to my niece Angie, who I love dearly. She's more like a little sister to me than a niece, and always has been since we were very small. In 2003, Angie moved from Western Oklahoma to Amarillo to be close to someone that she loved very much, who had lost her mother. Angie lost her father a couple years after that, but this was someone who had lost their mother. And within a few weeks of getting there, Angie had a really good job that paid good money, and she was doing what she liked. She was, you know, working in a restaurant atmosphere in a 4-star hotel. And she got promoted very quickly. They realized that she had talent. She's a very, very good cook. They realized that she had talent, and they promoted her to sous chef. Now, everybody in the family knows if you go to Angie's house, you can eat some good food, because this girl can cook. She had never really lived that far away from her family, but she was happy because she really liked her job and everything like that. She had friends. Angie is loved by everybody. Everybody that meets her likes her. She's just a friendly person and a real good person. She has very strong character. I've always admired that about her. She knows who she is, and she's been this way since she was a teenager. She's just always been a very strong person. So that was in 2003. On January 5th, 2004, at 4 a.m. in the morning, she is driving to work. And as she turned the corner by her house, heading towards work, God spoke to her and said, it's time to go home. Well, you know, she'd kind of just got there like a year earlier or so. And she thought, oh, I don't really want to go home. I like my job. 5 minutes later, I remember when this happened. 5 minutes after this, her best friend from Western Oklahoma called and said, I'm moving up there, get us a house. And so immediately she thought that she didn't hear from God about moving home, that the sign of the circumstance of a friend moving there was a stronger sign. And so she found him a house, and her friend moved up there. I mean, what's better than having your best friend live in the same town with you? And her best friend got a good job. They were doing real good. The next year, she started to lose her peace a little bit. She just kind of felt kind of unsettled. I remember when this was all going on because I lived in Western Oklahoma at that time and I was working. And she would call me and we would talk about, you know, what God once wanted her to do. And I felt that she was supposed to move back to Western Oklahoma. But it didn't matter what I felt because the person that God's calling to move has to feel it for themselves in order. That's a huge step. You pick up your whole life and move it is a huge step. And y'all know, the ones of you who have done it, you know. So she thought, she felt kind of a loss of peace. She told God, she said, look, if you want me to move, you have to give me a job there. You got to give me a job. You know, her dad had called and offered her a place to live because they were moving out to the lake, her dad and her mom. And he said, you can come live in the house if you want. So she had a place to live. She said, I'm not moving unless you give me a job. So she stayed in Amarillo. And this is 2005. In August of 2005, she was out with friends and somebody took her billfold out of her purse. A few weeks later, somebody took a carton of cigarettes out of her car. Then a few weeks after that, she's in the hotel, she's doing her job, and by then she is managing two departments. The only person ever in the history of that hotel to simultaneously manage two departments. She was department head over two departments at the same time and did a good job. So a few weeks after that, when the cigarettes were stolen out of her car, security walks up to her and said, somebody broke into your car. She thought they were joking with her. She said, uh-uh. And so she walks outside to look. Her entire kitchen crew walks out right behind her. She walks out there, and the passenger side window of her car was bashed in. And right there, she dropped to her knees in that parking lot and cried out to God in front of her entire crew. Angie is a very humble person. And she said, I'm sorry, Lord. I'm so sorry I didn't listen. She knew right then that she had come out from under God's protection because she didn't obey. Because we had talked about all this kind of stuff. This was before I wrote the Wilderness Companion, but she knew I'd been through the wilderness already. In that car, she had left a wallet or something. Her cash for her rent, her cash for her car payment, an expensive camera, prescription glasses she had just gotten, and you know those are expensive, and in her wallet was the first artwork by her 3-year-old grandbabies, which meant more. I know Angie well enough to know that meant more to her than all the other stuff put together. In fact, she walked for miles from that restaurant checking dumpsters trying to find that artwork. And her crew walked with her and went on like in the surrounding streets because she was so devastated over that artwork. So later that month, she said, okay, fine, I'm moving. She decided she would go ahead and move, but she would just drive back and forth, commute, and work the job. So she moved back home. And she commuted, and the first week she moved back, the first week that she commuted back to the job to do it, she got robbed again. Did I mention that when the ark moves, your protection moves with it? Okay. So she knew then that, you know, I can't make a demand of God to give me a job. I just have to do what he says. So she quit that job. Right after she quit that job, she got a phone call offering her the best job she had ever had in her entire life, making way more money and doing something she absolutely loved. True story. And she said, I no longer try to rearrange things in my head when God speaks to me. I let him make my decisions and lead my way now. Isn't that a good story? When the ark moves, move with it. You'll be in real big trouble if you don't, because when the ark moves, he takes his peace with it. He takes his provision with it. He takes his protection with it. If you don't go where the ark's going, you're kind of on your own. Okay, so here are the Israelites. They're going in to take the promised land. Moses has died. And it makes me sad when I think of Moses dying because he led the Israelites for 40 years. And then he only got to see the promised land from a distance because he disobeyed that one time. And you can just picture the windswept mountainside and Moses up there and dying and he's alone. Well, he's alone. I'm sure God was with him, but it makes me sad to think of that he missed out on that. But in Joshua 3:7, God spoke to them and he said, I'm going to give you favor And I'm going to make the people around you afraid of you. Just do what I tell you, you know. So then, you know, when they went into the wilderness, they had to, God had to part the Red Sea for them to get into the wilderness because they were, there was no way. So he had to make a way where there was no way. When they're going into the promised land, they face the same thing again because the Jordan River was there. So he had to part the Jordan River and make a way where there was no way so they could go into the promised land. Okay. It's always going to look like there's no way for you to get into the promised land. Okay. It's always going to look like there's no way it could happen. Okay. God just told me that. I didn't see that before. It will always look impossible. Y'all bear with me while I write notes. I don't like to lose revelation, so I always write them down. I have scribbled stuff everywhere. So God parts the Jordan River, and he does it exactly the way he tells me he's going to do it. They cross over, and they know that they're going to have to fight in there, okay? Because one of the things that he told them when he said, you know, I'm going to take you into the land of milk and honey, is he said, there's going to be all, you know, these ites are going to be there, the Hittites and the, you know, the Jebusites and the, all these ites. And we're going to talk about those in just a minute. In Joshua 5:7, Joshua circumcises all the children of Israel that are going in. These are the children of the original Israelites. The original Israelites complained and acted up in the dead. They worshiped the golden calf. They complained about the manna and they did all this stuff. And so God said, you're not, you know, and they didn't believe that that he could take them into the promised land. So they had unbelief instead of faith. So he said, you're not going in the promised land. Back to the desert you go. And he waited until all of them had died. And then he took their children. If you will remember, when they were first coming out of Egypt, he said, ask every woman of her neighbor for silver and gold and raiment, clothing. And by this, you're going to spoil the Egyptians. He said, put them on your sons and daughters. God knew which ones were going to make it into the promised land. Okay. So Joshua circumcises all of them because they've never been circumcised. Circumcision put them under the covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, which was when God said, I'm going to multiply you. He told Abraham, he said, I'm going to multiply you. I'm going to make you exceedingly fruitful. Kings will come out of you. I'm going to be your God. You're going to, you know, and I'm going to give you all this land. I'm going to, this land is going to belong to you and your descendants. If they did not have a covenant, they wouldn't have had all the protection and the blessings that they had. Okay, now, I want to share this with y'all because I didn't see this before today. In Joshua chapter 5, it says, and they did eat of the old corn of the land on the morrow after the Passover, unleavened cakes and parched corn in the selfsame day. And the manna ceased on the morrow after they had eaten of the old corn of the land. So as soon as they started eating in the new land, the old provision died away. Neither had the children of Israel manna anymore, but they did eat of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. Okay, y'all remember when the two spies went to spy out the land? They brought back the giant grapes and all that stuff. That's the fruit. So a sign that you're entering the promised land is when your old provision goes away and you start eating the fruit of the new land. Because the fruit changes. When you go into the promised land, you're not eating peanut butter and ramen noodles anymore. That was the sign for me. Okay. Now, let's talk about obstacles. The idolatry of wealth is a big obstacle, okay? Let me read to you from Joshua chapter 6. Talking about Jericho, and the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein, to the Lord only. Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And you in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest you make yourselves accursed when you take of the accursed thing, and make the camp of Israelites a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of brass and iron are consecrated to the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. Okay, now, what happened was, Achan, one of the men going in to fight against Jericho saw some stuff he really wanted. He took it. But the children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zadi, sorry, it's not very bright in here, the son of Zerah of the tribe of Judah took of the accursed thing, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against the children of Israel. And here somewhere, oh, here it is. He says, when I saw among the spoils of goodly Babylonish garment, and 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold, 50 shekels in weight, then I coveted them. And I took them, and behold, they are hidden in the earth in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. Achan took something that was that God had deemed was cursed. Achan took something that belonged to God. Okay? God had said, this stuff goes in my treasury. This is mine. All the gold and silver, all this stuff is mine. You put it in my treasury. And Achan took some of that. That was God's stuff. He wasn't supposed to take that. Okay? So, because of what Achan did, because he idolized the gold and the silver and the beautiful garment, he and his entire family were stoned to death. They suffered and died being stoned to death by all the people they knew and loved and had traveled among all this time, because he couldn't say no to that. We can idolize a lot of things besides just wealth. When you are going into your promised land, the obstacles are a whole lot of the same obstacles that you face in the wilderness, because God has to be first. God is first, period. He's first. We can idolize our family. When God called me out of Woodward and he said, start packing, I'm moving you. He didn't say where. He didn't say why. He didn't say, I think he did tell me why, but he didn't tell me how this was all going to work. He just said, go, you're going. I wanted to be up there. I wanted to stay close to my mom. My mom was in the care home. You know, she was in her 80s. I knew that she didn't have an extended amount of time, most likely. Her mother died much younger than she did. Mom lived to 87. I wanted to stay close to her. I wanted to stay close to my grandson. Now, I could have said, I'm not going. I want to be close to Mom and John and, you know, whatever. If I had, there are no telling what blessings I would have missed, because God has a specific time to take you into where you're supposed to be. I am sure, I'm absolutely positive, because I did not turn away from sins early enough in my walk that I missed opportunities back then that God wanted to use. I am sure of that, because there's no way that, you know, I couldn't have missed them because I wasn't doing the right thing. So what I'm saying is, if you hear or feel the leading of God, don't make your family an idol. Living close to your family, whatever. Yes, if you have aging parents, obviously God expects you to, you know, honor them and probably take care of them however you can. What he told me when he took me out of, I think it was when he took me out of Sayre in 1998, and I was crying. I cried all the way to Texas. I literally cried all the way to Texas, all the way to my dad's house, because I didn't want to leave my mom. And she wasn't even in care home then, but I'm just really close to my mom. And, you know, my grandson was there, my kids were there. And I cried all the way to Texas. And I said, Lord, what if Mom don't have what she needs? He said, will you trust me to take care of her? So I said, yeah, I will. I will. It was hard for me to do that. It was hard for me to trust God with, because Mom was so precious to me. But we can trust him. So don't let family stand in the way of what God wants to do in your life. Because if you let them stand in the way, they're an idol, okay? I was praying about this show today, and it hit me, you know, what idolatry really is. I got into idolatry by marrying people that I wasn't supposed to marry. And that is depending on something or someone other than God, okay, to feel unafraid or provided for, whatever you want to call it. But today I was praying about this show, and it hit me that what idolatry really is anything you pursue that looks good but isn't God. It isn't God's will for your life, or it isn't God's best for your life. Anything that looks good that you pursue but it's not of God is an idol. And when you get into idolatry, he will shut your eyes. And then you can't tell that it's an idol. And that's what's really terrifying about idolatry to me. That is what happened to me. I don't want that to happen to y'all. Another thing that can be an idol when you're in the wilderness or when you're going into the promised land and God's trying to take you one way and you're trying to hold on to something over here like, no, I don't want to go, is your career. I had a career in Western Oklahoma. I had a very good career in Western Oklahoma that provided very well for me. And I loved what I did. I loved researching title. I absolutely loved it, running records in the courthouse. I liked it better than anything I'd ever done. And I got to do it for about 10 years. God gave me something better. Can I just tell you that? God is trying to give you something new. I love what I do now. I really love writing books and researching the Word and, you know, making podcasts. I love what I do now, too. And what I do now, I have peace in because it has eternal value. And the whole time I was running records, I loved what I did. But I would be standing there pulling books, y'all, this is the truth, and listening to sermons and praying, God, in my heart, saying, Lord, please, I want a job where I work for you. I want a job where I work for you. And I'd be pulling these big, giant, huge books. They're like this thick. They weigh like I don't know how many pounds. And you're pulling those books all day long and making notes. And all day, every day, I'd be praying, Lord, I want to work for you. I want to work for you. I want to work for you. I did that for years because I loved what I did. And I had a lot of respect in that industry. But I was a manager out there. But I didn't love that it didn't have eternal value because I knew God well enough to know that the work for Him was far more important. Far more important than anything I could ever do for any oil company. Money can become an idol real easily, especially if you're used to making money, or let's say you have a nice little savings account and you feel like God's leading you into the wilderness. Let me tell you, God will not lead you, really lead you into the wilderness until you've depleted what you have. That's what He did with me in 1998. He left me in Sayre long enough to go through my little $3,000 or $4,000 savings account. That's all I had. And when that was gone, then He took me into the wilderness. Then He brought me to Dallas where I was eating peanut butter sandwiches and ramen noodles every day. But He provided the peanut butter and the ramen noodles, so I'm not complaining. He will let you deplete what you have first. Because if He doesn't, you'll just rely on that. And that money can become an idol. Savings account, stocks and bonds, whatever you got, that can become an idol. Your pride can be an idol. Let's say that God speaks to you to leave your job, move out of town, go wherever. Kathmandu, wherever He tells you to go. A lot of people have an extreme fear of looking foolish in front of friends and family. And that will really hurt you. You can't do anything great for God if you have that fear of what man thinks. As one who has taken criticism for doing crazy things that God told me to do, I can tell you with all assurance, it's not fun when they criticize you. It's not fun when somebody goes, I really think you missed it on this one. You know, sometimes you think you missed it. Especially when you get inside the desert and you're 3 days journey into the desert and you have no food or water, you're like, okay, I missed it. There, you know, where's the provision? I missed it. If that doesn't mean you missed it. That means God's teaching you and He's waiting for you to get on board with the teaching so, you know, you can get the job done. Don't be afraid of looking foolish to the point that it keeps you from obeying God. Because all we are supposed to fear is Him. Okay, when you go into the promised land, you go to take the promised land, the enemy's going to set snares for you. That's what Achan was. Achan taking that seeing that gold and that silver and that beautiful garment, I'm sure that Satan was right there going, wouldn't that garment look beautiful on your wife, Achan? Wouldn't this gold and silver help put your children through school? Can't you send them to college with, you know... So when the Israelites went up to fight at Ai, they fell before their enemies and they ran. They turned and ran back because the soldiers fought on foot back then with swords. They turned and ran. They couldn't stand before their enemies because the accursed thing was among them. Achan had stolen what was God's and they didn't know. And Joshua, you know, he's like tearing his clothes and putting ashes on his head and throws himself down in front of the ark. Lord, what happened? What happened? You know, we're supposed to take Ai and we're running. What do I even say to this? That, you know, we're running from our enemies here. The enemy will set snares for you in the wilderness and also in the promised land. And when you're trying to go into the promised land, he will put up that wall of the Red Sea or the Jordan River or whatever it is that you're up against, and he will make it look like there is no way you are going into the promised land. There is no way you're going to take this. That destiny is not for you. You made that up in your mind or whatever. But the truth is, God's going to make a way where there's no way. And he does it because it gets him glory and because that becomes part of your testimony, how he made a way where there was no way. Another obstacle are deceptions. Y'all remember when they had crossed the Jordan, they were in the promise, and they were starting to fight their way through. They took Jericho and all that. And then the Gibeonites came to them. Remember that? The Gibeonites came to them, and they were wearing the old clothes. They had the moldy bread and all that. And they thought that they were their friends, so they made a covenant with them. I'll tell you why that was a problem. If I can find the verse. Y'all ever have one of those Bibles that's like starting to fall apart on you? I've used this Bible for so long. I have more Bibles. I just love this one. It's all worn out. And I debated on whether to have it rebound or just buy another one. I finally bought another one. Deuteronomy chapter 7. When the Lord your God shall bring you into the land where you go to possess it, when you get where you're going, and has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. And when the Lord your God shall deliver them before you, you shall smite them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them and show mercy to them. Okay? Obviously with the Gibeonites, they did. They didn't check with God to see if that was God. I've been guilty of that plenty of times. I've been guilty of that. Sometimes something just looks right, so you don't think you need to check with God. And that's how we get into trouble. This is in Joshua chapter 9. They did work wilily and went and made as if they had been ambassadors and took old sacks upon their asses and wine bottles old and rent and bound up and old shoes and clouted upon their feet and old garments upon them. And all the bread of their provision was dry and moldy. They had the right look. That's a word for somebody. They had the right look, and they went to Joshua to the camp at Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We become from a far country. Now, therefore, make you a league with us. Make a covenant with us. We came from a long ways away. We're no threat to you." So they made a covenant, and then I don't remember how it was revealed to them. Joshua made peace with them and made a league with them to let them live, and the princes of the congregation swore to them. And it came to pass at the end of 3 days, after they had made a league with them, that they heard that they were their neighbors and that they dwelt among them. 3 days, John Morgan taught me that 3 days, the number three in the Bible, represents something that's hidden being revealed, like Jesus rose from the dead in 3 days. So we need to watch for deceptions sent by the enemy, because that's one of the types of snares he's going to set for you. He attacks heaviest at the beginning of a thing and at the end of the thing. Remember at the beginning of the whole wilderness thing, they're in Egypt and the Pharaoh starts, you know, upping the workload and beating them with the whips and all that kind of stuff. And then at the end, when they're going in to take the promised land, boy, he laid it on. Okay, now let's talk about, I found this really cool website. It's called BibleFellowshipUnion.com that talked about the seven nations greater and mightier than you. And it kind of gave a meaning for each one, and I started researching them some to see what they represented. Because these are all enemies to us in the promised land. One of the things that I really love about when God took them into the promised land is he said, you know, I'm going to take you into the land of a land larger. So it's more, there's breathing room. You know, when you're in the wilderness, you're like this. You can barely pay your bills, if you can even pay them all. And, you know, there's no breathing room. But he said, I'm going to take you into a larger land, a land flowing with milk and honey, which means an abundance of good things. And the land of the Hittites, the Girgashites, which means all your enemies are going to be there. Okay. Psalm 23:5. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. That's what he was doing with the children of Israel. He was preparing their blessings right in front of all their enemies. So I think that's just really cool. Okay, so let's talk about all these nations. The Hittites. This name means terror. It means fear. The Hittites were known to be very strong and mighty in war. Remember Uriah the Hittite? They were known to be very strong fighting people. The Girgashites means one who returns back from a pilgrimage. And I was thinking about this and studying it. I think it means somebody that's double-minded, somebody that's wavering or unstable in their faith. So we need to be careful of fear and of being double-minded. These are enemies in the promised land that we're talking about. The Amorites were arrogant and boastful. That's pride. We really need to be careful of pride. If anything will get you in trouble fast, that's it. The Canaanites, that name means merchants who humiliate. So they were kind of the equivalent of wealthy, powerful people. So we need to watch out for wealthy and powerful people can have a lot of influence over you. And if you're not centered on God, they can influence you to do things that are not part of God's will for you. The Perizzites. This is listed as one of the lands that was practicing abominations in Ezra chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. Okay? And God did not want the children of Israel, you know, marrying or giving their children in marriage to people who are practicing abominations. You know that? He's like, stay away from these nations. They're not like you. They're not like what I want you to be like. So that sort of represents lasciviousness, an absolute, you know, giving in to our appetites. Lasciviousness is just doing as much of everything you want to do as you want to do. It's a kind of a hedonistic kind of lifestyle, I guess. A lack of discipline. We'll call it a lack of discipline. The Hivites. That word Hivites, they don't have an absolute meaning for it in the historical documents. They believe that it means tent dweller. The Hivites from Gibeah were the men who deceived Joshua. They were Gibeonites. And the others were the Jebusites. The Jebusites lived in Jebus then, which is now Jerusalem. And they lived there until the time of David because the children of Israel never did completely destroy them. The Palestinian Arabs believe that the Jebusites are the forefathers of the Palestinians, and they want Jerusalem. They are a fighting people. I believe that those are probably some of the descendants of Ishmael. I'm guessing, but I think they're some of the Ishmaelites probably. So we need to watch out for all of them. It is very, 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 I cannot stress this enough, important that when the ark moves, you move with it. It is very important that you go where God's presence is, where his anointing is, where his provision is, where his protection is. God can give you protection you cannot buy with money. Can I just tell you that? There are some things nobody but God can protect you from. I'm going to read y'all a story. I really like this story. Not in Corey. Was 13 years old, 5'2", and weighed soaking wet, maybe 100 pounds. His attackers were teenagers, larger than Nadin, and I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right, and outnumbered him 7-1. For 30 minutes, they hit, kicked, and beat him. He never stood a chance. Corey's mom had recently moved the family to Philadelphia from Minnesota. She had lost her job as a hotel maid and was looking for work. In 2000, she had escaped war-torn Liberia. Nodding Corey, then, was the new kid in a rough neighborhood with a mom who was an unemployed immigrant, everything a wolf pack of bullies needed to justify an attack. The hazing began weeks earlier. They picked on him. They called his mother names. They routinely pushed, shoved, and ambushed him. Then came the all-out assault on a January day. They dragged him through the snow, stuffed him into a tree, and suspended him on a 7-foot wrought iron fence. Corey survived the attack and would have likely faced a few more except for the folly of one of the bullies. He filmed the pile-on and posted it on YouTube. A passerby saw the violence and chased away the bullies. Police saw it and got involved. The troublemakers landed in jail, and the story reached the papers. A staffer at the nationwide morning show, The View, read the account and invited Corey to appear on the broadcast. He did. As the video of the assault played on the screen behind him, he tried to appear brave, but his lower lip quivered. "Next time, maybe it could be somebody smaller than me," he said. Unbeknownst to him, the producer had invited some other Philadelphians to appear on the show as well. As the YouTube video ended, the curtain opened and three huge men walked out, members of the Philadelphia Eagles football team. Corey, a rabid fan, turned and smiled. One was all-pro receiver DeSean Jackson. Jackson took a seat on the couch as close to the boy as possible and promised him, "Anytime you need us, I got two linemen right here." Corey's eyes widened saucer-like as Jackson signed a football jersey and handed it to him. Then, in full view of every bully in America, he gave the boy his cell phone number. From that day forward, Corey has been only a call away from his personal bodyguards. Thugs think twice before they harass the kid who has an NFL football player's number on speed dial. God can protect you in ways that you could never buy for yourself. That's all I have for y'all today. I hope that you enjoyed the show. I hope that this show is a blessing to you and it helps you understand that in the wilderness we face obstacles, but in the promised land we also face obstacles. The Bible clearly says that our enemies are in that land of milk and honey. And we have to go and defeat them the way, however God tells us to do it. So remember these obstacles, okay? I'm going to just kind of recap them real quick for y'all. Idolatry, which can be the idolatry of family or career or money, pride, not looking foolish, or the idolatry of wealth, you know, the gold and the silver and the beautiful garments. And what God showed me today, anything you pursue that looks good but is not God. That is a word for a man who's listening to this show. You are pursuing a woman who looks good, but she's not God's will for you. And the Lord said you're attracted to doing some things that are outside of what your integrity would normally have you attracted to, and that's your sign. Get away. Get away from her. Snares of the enemy. You know, if you have the cursed thing among you, any cursed thing, if you hold on to what is God's, if you have something that belongs to God in your possession, if you have a cursed thing, this can be as simple as CDs or DVDs with evil appearing images on them, like horror movie stuff. Y'all, those are cursed items. I've worked in deliverance in a house where the last thing that was in the house was a DVD cover or a CD cover, and the Lord spoke to me and told me what was in, and this boy had moved out of this house, but he'd left this behind. It was under some trash, and his father, being a worship leader, knew that something was wrong. There was something else in the house with him, but he couldn't find it. And God spoke to me when I was there that night and said, "That's what it is." And he went up there, and that's he went to the upstairs to that room and found it immediately and got it out there, and then the house was fine. Those images do not belong in the house of a Christian. And if they are in there, they are doorways to demonic presences, demonic spirits, and attacks on your family. So it's up to you. If you leave them in there, just know what you got. Deception sent by the enemy. The enemy is going to set snares for you in the wilderness and in the promised land. He's going to set snares for you. He doesn't want you taking the promised land. That's a testimony against him. The enemy is going to do everything he can to stop you. He knows if you make it through the wilderness, you're going to have a testimony. You come out of the wilderness with a gift in your hands. The last wilderness that was so terrifying, the 2009-2010 wilderness that I was in, I still remember the day I got the revelation. And my first thought was, I got to make a video and tell the others. Everybody was in such dire straits in the recession. So there was a group of us on YouTube, and we just all share anything that we got. We're trying to encourage each other and anyone else who watched the videos. And when I got on there to make the video, I think I started crying on the video, and that's just something I've never done before. But I was so grateful to God for showing me. And I remember sitting on my couch after that and feeling the gift in my hands. And I'm not sure what the gift was other than tremendously strong faith. After surviving that, you have a lot more faith. The gift of the more intimacy with God. Definitely got that gift. And, you know, whatever else he decides to bring out of it. And it was right after that that I wrote The Wilderness Companion, which I consider to be a huge gift to me and a great privilege. I'm working on finishing The Wilderness Companion devotional. I'm still a little ways off, but it's more than halfway done. So you could say that that came out of it too, that and all the other wildernesses. But anyway, I'm rambling. Thank you for watching. I hope this has been a blessing to you. Jesus bless you. Y'all have a great week.